Morning, I get this odd feeling where I lose all sensation along the left side of my body. But that's normal. Completely normal, I'm sure. It's the Sunday blues, right? And anyway, it doesn't last that long. By around midday on Monday, I'm fine. Mostly. I'm an obituary writer for the somewhat insalubrious London paper, The Mail and Ledger, which comes out on Monday morning, and part of my job involves dealing with irate phone calls, tear-soaked letters, and the occasional little old lady queuing outside my cubicle. Like yesterday morning, when Rosa Greenberg called after The Mail and Ledger hit the stands. Rosa was phoning about her late husband George's obituary. My hand shook as I took the call. I slouched down in my seat as low as I could, trying to avoid Kimberly's gimlet gaze. Kimberly's my colleague, who sits in the cubicle next to mine. She was busy writing her action list for the day with different coloured biros to underline things like priority item number 1 and red flag, follow up before 12. Oh, I despise Kimberly Monsworth Green. Meanwhile, Rosa Greenberg sobbed into the receiver.
I just wasn't ready. I mean, it's not like Pauline, you know, Pauline from next door. I told you about her when we spoke after it happened.
She sniffed. I closed my eyes, hoping that just this once my tear ducts would behave. Today I vowed, as I do every Monday, I would be strong. Rosa continued. Pauline had time. Roger had had 2 heart attacks already, and even then she says she'd been preparing for it, but George was just gone. I know he was 78, but he was fine. He wasn't young, but he wasn't old, not really. It was too soon. A loud foghorn sound announced that Rosa was blowing her nose. I took the time to surreptitiously reach for my ever-ready box of Kleenex and mop up my own eyes. I'd have to be strong some other time. Alerted to the sound, like a vulture circling from above, Kimberly turned to raise an eyebrow at me. I ignored her, swivelling my chair as far away as I could to the wall opposite, while Rosa prepared to send my leaky tear ducts into overflow.
So beautiful, what you wrote. That's why I'm calling. It's like you knew him. I was worried about it. You know, worried that it wouldn't be George, but it was. I know this probably sounds silly, but George would have loved to have read it. He would have been so pleased that you wrote about his time in India, dear, she said, before ringing off.
Afterwards, I put the phone back in its cradle and stared at the horrid blue speckled carpet until I had regained control of my wobbling chin. Kimberly would never cry at her desk.
Journalists, she told me haughtily a few weeks ago, are meant to be objective, to report the facts without emotion. Try to be more of a journalist, Rhea, she rebuked. While I considered that the first action on my own action list would be to staple her stupid list to her forehead.
I suppose that wouldn't be an objective act, though, would it?
The thing is, being objective is fine for Kimberly, who gets to report about current affairs and breaking news, in the entertainment world anyway, like when Kim Kardashian insured her bum. Oh, yes. They ran a whole piece asking if it was worth insuring body parts and what the point of it all really was. People wrote in. There were debates. There were polls. There were people with a bit too much free time on their hands, if you ask me. But I digress. My point is that it's hard to be impartial when you write about death every day. I've been doing that now for close to 3 years. 3 very long years. I never planned on being an obituary writer. It's not something you study for at university. No one says, oh, I'd like to do a course on financial journalism and obituary writing. And anyway, when I joined the paper, the job wasn't advertised as obituary writer. The advert had read, writer required for popular London broadsheet. Yes, they actually called themselves a broadsheet, not a tabloid. I remember that clearly. Graduate level acceptable. And when I started, I wrote about other things too, like films.